Welcome back to another episode of the On Deck Circle Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Nick Zanabone. You can find me at nzanabone93 on Twitter. The first week of the MLB season is in the books. All of my teams are awful. I'm going to overreact. I'm going to trade everybody. Jason, come talk me off the ledge, please. Jason.
If it's one thing, you got to relax.
I can't. Alex Kirilloff has one hit. and I have him literally everywhere.
Hey, he's healthy. You're already a win there. He's healthy. So.
Look, you know who else is healthy? Byron Buxton. Destroying the ball.
Absolutely. Already picking up. Yeah, when he's healthy, man, it's yeah. He's
one of the biggest if he's healthy.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's gonna be like the Penny Hardaway, but like of
baseball. Of baseball. Yeah. I think I saw on Twitter the other day someone was like, I think Paul Sporer made a comment. This has been a decade in the making, and it literally has been. He was drafted in 2012, yeah. So here we are 10 years later, and he's finally, hopefully.
1-2 in that draft, and now they're on the same team.
Yeah, look at that.
That's fun. Dave's going to be mad that we're lollygagging, and that I made a basketball reference, so Dave, come in.
Nick, I tuned in for the Bachelor talk.
All right, I do have one quick thing. Bachelor in Paradise is starting soon, which I think you will actually enjoy.
I highly doubt that.
No, they put them all on a beach. They're all super horned up, and they're just like, just trying to like, yeah. I think you'd be in on it.
I think I'm gonna pass.
They're all so beautiful, men, women alike.
I think I'm gonna. You know what? I'd actually rather talk about
baseball.
I'd rather talk about the San Diego Padres and Minnesota Twins trade that had, I don't know if I'd say it surprised us, but it kind of did. I can see
Paddock on The Bachelor. He's pretty handsome, right?
I don't know. I guess. You are the resident Bachelor expert.
Yeah. I put him on.
But, San Diego Padres shipped out Chris Paddock and Emilio Pagan for closer Taylor Rogers and a throw-in Brent Rooker. So, Jason, I'd like to hear what you think of Chris Paddock now joining the Twins. Team that needed pitching, so I get it.
Yeah, and this is one of those, like, last-minute deals that kind of just came across, I think, on either the eve of opening night or the morning of. It's one of those – in my eyes, I'm like, I still have a little bit of hope for Paddock, I guess, just because we saw what he did in 2019, and hopefully he's more one of those. This is one of those opportunities for him where it's like a change of scenery, maybe getting out of San Diego in that NL West, and then getting into maybe that little bit easier AL Central.
Calm down with that.
I know. Hey, those Tigers, man. They're I'm kind of curious to see what happens here. I know right now it's kind of slotted in as they come out and said it's going to be like a six starter the first time through. But I mean, let's face it, he's also competing against guys like Chris Archer. So I'm not really sure, you know, unless he just absolutely shits the bed. I don't foresee him losing to Chris Archer, because let's also face it, Chris Archer will probably be hurt after his first start. Mm-hmm. It's funny though, because I say he gets out of the NL West and his first starts against the Dodgers. So good luck to Paddock. Hopefully, he can get some sort of lightning in a bottle here against that first game against the Dodgers.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're part of the show, Nick. Go ahead.
I love this for the Padres because now they have their closer figured out. There's no like bullshit with Suarez, who got rocked that first game. I think it was the first game. It was one of the first two games. Got destroyed. You're not in the KBO anymore. You need to like wake up. At first I was confused on why the Twins even traded Rogers, because I was like, they kind of need a closer. And now I think I just read that someone else got, I think one of their other closers that we thought was going to be a closer got hurt, but I don't know if that's fully true.
Yeah.
It was in the 30 Rock chat, but I love Taylor. He's going to be better now because he's on the Padres. So I'm all in on Rogers. I don't know if Paddock's going to pan out in Minnesota, but he's going to get a chance. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense both directions because, I mean, Padres are loaded with pitching. Now, granted, it has to stay healthy, but they're loaded with pitching. And so Chris Paddock is a luxury, or was a luxury for them. And even though they had a loaded bullpen, I think, in San Diego, again, when healthy, what's the one thing that everyone tries to get at the trade deadline? Relief pitching. So, you know, for them to add, you know, Rogers, even if he, you know, ends up becoming, you know, eventually the eighth or even the seventh inning guy, I still think it makes sense because they really gave up nothing as far as they're concerned. You know what I mean? But then as far as the Twins need pitching. And I think that, you know, we know that I think pitching is extraordinarily volatile. And the only thing more volatile than pitching is simply relief pitching. So, you know, getting rid of a closer for a guy who could be a solid two or three, you know, in the game if he can just get back to whatever it was that he had. I don't see the huge downside there necessarily. I mean, yeah, that really hurts their bullpen quite a bit, but I'd rather take a chance on a solid rotational piece than get rid of a mid-tier closer, or, you know, then hold on to a mid-tier closer. So I don't know. It'll probably end up working out better for the Padres in reality, but I see what both teams are doing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Stephen Kwan here real quick. Wow. I mean, what a start, you know, to the season. I mean, good Lord, we're 14 at bats in, and he has yet to swing and miss at a baseball. So, you know, extraordinarily crazy small sample size, but that's still like crazy cool, you know. 10 hits and 14 at bats, 4 RBIs. I mean, I don't know. I guess really what the question becomes is, you know, however you want to put it, redraft dynasty. I mean, what do you think of Kwan's value? I mean, it's a couple of games, it's a handful of at bats, it's been all-time great, but, you know, what are you guys making of it?
This is sustainable, right?
No. No, there's no way he hits over 600, Nick.
All right, fine. He's going to hit 550.
Yeah, it's going to drop well below 600.
So I saw a tweet today. I don't know who said it, but he was on the same team as Nick Madrigal.
Yep.
And he had better count, like better everything, like across the board. And he was like a year younger. So It was amazing to me that this guy, like, I probably heard of him late last year, like just like coming up and all that. But like Madrigal was such like a name for us, like as dynasty players. And this guy who had better stats than him, yet we just didn't, I didn't do my homework on him. But I feel like he just kind of came out of nowhere in the last 9-10 months.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that was also from his, you know, he had a huge breakout in 2021 in the minors. He slashed .328, .407, .527. And then there was obviously rumblings in the offseason of the Guardians needing outfield help and maybe relying on making the team out of spring training. And here we are, he did. And it's kind of proven why he can. And yeah, you're right. He's like just similar to Madrigal. He barely has any power, but he's got great contact rate. I think as we've discussed, he still hasn't swung and missed through 22 plate appearances. And so far this season, he's got no power. I mean, he's got a 1700 OPS, but no home runs. So take it for what you want. I mean, he's obviously got value. His dynasty value is through the roof right now. I mean, I'd be looking to sell, I think. I don't know if he's ever going to get any bigger value than right now. And like Nick said, we didn't really know about him because he never was that top prospect. I don't know. I think he was drafted, I think, 10 or 12 rounds after his teammate Nick Madrigal. So there was not a lot of pedigree there. So there's a reason why we never heard of him until this offseason.
I do want to throw a name out. Yermin Mercedes. We were having the same conversation with him last year, except he was hitting home runs.
I think Kwan is long-term better.
Oh, 1,000.
Than Mercedes was.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it's similar.
There's always one or two of these.
Yeah, I mean, like the Tigers have like maybe the prime example, and maybe it's just a hometown thing. So maybe it's more than I think it is. But I mean, Chris Shelton had some absolutely ridiculous Aprils.
I don't know.
And then he would do absolutely nothing after the fact. Like, he'd be leading the league in home runs after April. They have like 12 home runs in April, and then he'd finish the year with like 14. But I don't know. So quick question, and we don't need to get too into it. I just want an answer from you guys. I'm going to ask you each a separate question. Nick, Dynasty, would you rather have Kwan or Yelich?
I would rather have Kwan to sell him than does that make sense? So, like, I'd rather Kwan on my roster so then I could trade Kwan, because I think he can get me more than Yelich can right now.
Okay. What about you, Jason? We're going to go either Kwan or Bellinger.
Oh, man. These are tough sells, because right now, you know, Kwan's got that really safe floor. You know, contact's always been his bread and butter. So it's like, you know, do you want that floor of like a good average, or do you want that upside of Bellinger, who still can't hit, but if he ever does figure it out, can return to his MVP form and get, you know, those home runs. But I think just my love for upside, I'm going to go with Bellinger still.
Yeah. So fun fact, I would go Yelich and I would go Bellinger. And it's a combination of what Jason had said, as far as chasing the upside. And it's a combination of, I just don't think that Stephen Kwan is a thing. I mean, I don't think he's bad, but I think he's a fourth outfielder. And I'm not talking in fantasy, I'm talking in real life. I think that'll end up being his ceiling as a fourth outfielder. But hey, man, it's fun. I'm enjoying watching him. I will continue to do so until he plays Detroit. but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, let's see what happens when you know, the pitchers start to adjust to his to him, and see if he can make those adjustments that are necessary.
Right. So another interesting start is a little lesser known guy for most people, and that's Spencer Strider out in Atlanta. So he's a guy that I was pretty heavily in on. I don't know, middle of last year or so, I had gotten him in a few places. I actually turned around and sold him towards the end of the year at what I just thought was like a sell high. And, you know, again, everything we talk about right now is super early. But, you know, he's looked amazing so far in 2022, you know, 5 1/3 innings and 8 strikeouts, you know, walk 3 guys. So, you know, a little bit of work to do there, but I mean, he's looked really good coming out of that bullpen. And I think that's not exactly the piece that we already got a fan. Rachel says Strider,
our resident Braves fan.
Well, so fun fact, also a Clemson fan. And guess where Spencer Strider went to college?
Clemson.
So she's got a huge lady boner for Spencer Strider.
He's got a six stash.
Yeah, well. I think Nick should try to grow a six stash.
Oh yeah.
I can't. It just gets really creepy looking. And
but I mean, it'll be interesting. Like, I think that on another team, I think Spencer Strider would be a little more interesting, because if you could put him in your rotation, I think, you know, you could see some really electric stuff. But, you know, barring an injury, which I'm sure the Braves do not want, this is kind of what you're gonna see from Strider. And I mean, anytime you're getting a guy that's producing, you know, I wouldn't complain about it. But he is off to an interesting start. And, you know, redraft, you can probably forget about him right now. I don't know what you would pick him up for. But in Dynasty, depending on the depth of your league especially, if he's still sitting on waivers, I think you probably have a guy that you could drop for him. And, you know, I don't know. What do you guys think, Spencer Strider?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he was just drafted in 2020 and he's a fourth rounder. So it's not like he's got some, you know, high, you know, draft capital, but he flew through the minors last year, starting in, you know, high A and all the way up, made his debut at the end of last season in 2021. He's got that top end velocity. And, you know, you did say, you mentioned they got those 8 strikeouts in 5 innings, and that's including 5 of those strikeouts were in 6 of the batter's face against his start against, or his appearance against Cincinnati. So, you know, I think honestly, it obviously is like a baseball fan. I want to see him in that rotation. I don't want to see, you know, him just wasting away in the Atlanta Braves bullpen. So I'd love to see him And I know that, you know, the Braves want to keep giving Kyle Wright starts, and he did kind of look impressive in his first start, but I would love to see Strider in there over Kyle Wright for sure.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting. Like I said, I think it takes an injury probably for something to happen, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a lot of innings for two appearances too, you know?
Five
and some. It kind of reminds me of Whitlock. I mean, like, the story's different, but like, just a weapon out of the bullpen that they could easily start.
Mm-hmm. And also be on an innings cap again this year. So that's one of the reasons why he's coming out of the pen right now, too. They want to limit those innings.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost similar to like a Josh Hader at the very, very beginning of his career, too. I mean, I'm not comparing Spencer Strider to Josh Hader. However, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities by any stretch. I mean, that kind of stuff is becoming more and more common these days, especially for, you know, your more analytical teams who are looking for like high leverage outs. You know, if you can throw Spencer Strider out there for two innings, and who cares if it's the fifth and sixth? If he's facing the top of the order, I mean, that could actually be, you know, what makes or breaks the game, not whoever closes. So I don't know. It's interesting. You can't have too many weapons, like Jason said. Speaking of weapons, Alex Manoa, looking dominant again. I mean, the walks were a little concerning. Six innings, you know, four walks in that time frame. But I mean, he looked dominant out there. He struck out seven guys, only allowed one hit. You know, you'd like to see the walks obviously get curtailed. I don't know how, you know, massive of a concern I'm going to leave that whenever everything else looked, you know, the way that it did. But, you know, Manoa's a guy that, you know, came up last year and really exceeded expectations. You know, didn't have, you know, any real walk issues last year. So I that's why I say I'm not super worried about just one start, but probably something just to keep an eye on. You just never know. But I mean, I think Manoa's value is at an all-time high. He gave you no reason to think that, you know, last year was a fluke. I'm one that's in the camp of I fully believe in Alec Manoa. But what are you guys thinking?
I mean, he had to face that bum ass Yankee lineup.
So. Yeah, they are pretty shitty.
They're really bad. They didn't beat the Red Sox 2 out of 3.
Hey, Nick, real quick, what's the Yankees starting shortstop? What's his name?
I don't even know. Is it Torres? Oh,
come on. Jesus
Christ. Oh, IKF.
Yeah, there you go. I was hoping you'd try to say the name. So
yeah.
I was just trying to trick you into saying it.
Nope, I did a good job. I fucking love Alec Manoa, though. He's
he's
gonna be so good for so long just because he's so big, like, just like
until he gets hurt.
Gas. He's gonna be durable, and he's gonna be a bulldog for the next like 10 years, probably even 12. If we're being
maybe.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway from that start, you know, obviously it was a domination, but also the changeup. He you know, he threw it almost double what the usage was in 2021. I think he threw it like 18 or 19%. Yesterday, and had a 57% whiff rate on a changeup. So if he can continue to use that changeup as a nice, you know, out pitch, I mean, that'll give him three, you know, plus pitch up mix. So I mean, and actually he threw all four of his pitches with a really good mix yesterday. So if he can keep doing that mix and use that changeup as another out pitch, man, again, just dominant. And yeah, the walks were a little concerning. I think he had like four walks and four out of six batters walked or something like that, but yeah, he looked great, man.
Yeah, so that changeup, he threw it 15 times, so basically 17%. I mean, again, we're talking one start,
but, yeah.
But I mean, you know, didn't give up a hit on it. Again, very small sample size, I get, but his XBA for that pitch and that start was 0.009. So basically, not even anything close to, you know, an expectation.
I just wonder if that was like a game plan for just the Yankees. I want to see how going forward, if that's a pitch he's going to rely on, you know, all the time, or if that was just like, hey, let's go in there and the Yankees struggle against changeups. I'm not sure. I'd like to see him continue using that changeup for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, it'll be interesting because, I mean, you nailed it. As I look at it, like his four-seam percentage was just slightly down, slider percentage slightly down, sinker percentage slightly down, but then the changeups are up. So everything else, he kind of just backed off very slightly and increased that changeup. So, yeah, I mean, if you throw in a a solid four pitch mix as opposed to, you know, three. Obviously, that is a huge difference. And if he can continue to throw that changeup effectively, you know, that's going to be interesting. And it's got, it looks like 7 mile an hour difference between the two. So that's perfect. Yeah. And it's basically a 7 mile difference as well between the slider too. So he's literally got three different speeds he's throwing at. He's throwing the fastball 94, throwing the changeup in there at 87, and then the slider is coming at 81. So not only is he changing, you know, angles, you know, he's changing speeds. And I mean, that's what I think really makes people hard to hit. Like, not a guy who can throw 102, or, you know, it's a guy who can pitch. And when you can change speeds, change eye levels and stuff like that, and then you can command stuff, that's what makes people impossible to hit, because you kind of just have to guess. And if you don't guess right, you're dead. Even if you guess right, that doesn't mean you're going to hit the damn thing, you know? So,
yeah. 30% CSW against a dominant Yankees lineup. So,
yeah, there you go. That's that number, 30%. That's the number, Jason.
Yep.
So we need to, you need to talk to us a little bit here, Jason, because you've been watching, I'm guessing, some Seiya Suzuki more than we have. And mm-hmm. this is the guy we've talked about. I think we talked about him quite a bit last week. We were talking about, like, you know, NL Rookie of the Year kind of stuff. But, you know, Suzuka is off to a pretty good start. And I think it just makes the most sense to hear your thoughts on him, because you're going to be the most educated of the group with the eyes on that mm-hmm. you've had.
Yeah, I mean, what's not to like about this? You know, we worried about what, you know, it's again, it's a small sample, but still, what we were worried, what's that transition going to be like, you know, from the NPB into MLB. And he's not showing any sort of slowing down. I mean, he's got a great eye at the plate, just as good, if not better, than Stephen Kwan. I think he has almost 100% swinging miss. I think he did have one. I think he got like a 95% or something like that. But so, and again, an advanced eye at the plate. But he has what Kwan lacks, and that's the power. We saw it again today with a double dong day today. Got one against the old teammate Quintana, so that was kind of nice to see. But I saw a stat that Suzuki joins Ohtani as the only Japanese player in MLB history to hit three home runs in their first four games in the MLB. So. Not to compare, you know, Suzuki to Ohtani, but I think you can kind of see here that he's more than just, you know, a guy that's going to come out there and swing and miss. You know, he's going to hit the home runs. He's going to make contact. And then there's even times I've seen it where it's like, you know, he had a sack fly the other day where it's like, you know, he saw that, you know, maybe not necessarily go for the home run, just put the ball and play out in the outfield and get that RBI across the plate. So he's kind of showing that advanced baseball IQ, which, you know, I guess someone of his, you know, he's not some young guy anymore. So it's not like, you know, you expect him to not know these things, but it was kind of nice to see. And again, it's a nice surprise, because you always worry, you know, you paid almost $100 million with the posting fee to get this guy. You know, is it going to be worth it? I know it's a small sample. We don't want to get too crazy here, but it's just good to see that, you know, he doesn't look overmatched. And then we talked a little pregame about the Brewers pitching. You know, he's not like he faced Quintana all those games. You know, he faced Woodruff, Burns and Peralta the first three games, so, you know, no slouches.
I kind of feel like these, you know, international guys, not like the, you know, the young prospects, you know, the guys like Suzuki and stuff, I feel like it's very similar to drafting a quarterback in the first round. Like the hit rate isn't great, and point. you really don't know what you're getting until you get them on the field,
right?
And I literally just came up with the analogy right now, but I think it's
a good analogy,
good comparison, because you get your guys like, you know, Ichiro, and then you get your guys like Fukudome, and you get a little bit in between. But, you know, the hit rate isn't super high, but it always comes with hype. You know, I mean, you don't see a lot of international guys that get signed. I mean, obviously there's some, but usually the ones that get signed have some hype. I don't know. That's the way that I relay it. So this goes again here. Now the next topic, right into what we had, you know, talked about here with, you know, the call ups, you know, for debuts, and, you know, the biggest names in my opinion were, you know, Julio Rodriguez, Bobby Witt Jr., Spencer Torkelson, and so we've seen a mixture of things from these guys. Like, you know, Julio Rodriguez, I mean, you know, taking a page out of, you know, Kelnick's playbook here with, you know, one for 14 to start off with. He does have a stolen base. So, you know, that's cool, I guess, but he's struggled a little bit. Bobby Witt's have been a little bit better. I know he's got 2 hits and 16 at bats. He's got a stolen base, got a couple RBIs, but he had a really clutch hit. So, I mean, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you like. So, yeah, I mean, we'd rather see him batting better than 125, but, you know, Bobby Witt already looks like he absolutely, you know, fits.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Spencer Torkelson, he got his first hit today. I watched it, I would say live, but I mean, it was on TV against, you know, Nick's stupid team.
it was against Rich Hill. That does not count.
Hey, Dick Mountain counts, man.
Yeah.
But you know, Torkelson has very similar to Julio. He struggled. But I've seen just about all of Torkelson's at bats. And he's been fine. Like, I mean, there's a little bit of a difference. Torkelson, I feel like, has been pretty patient at the plate. He's got 3 walks, which I know seems silly, but I think that it's worth pointing out. You know, they've both been striking out a lot. I mean, Bobby Witt has, you know, maintained, you know, a little bit better, you know, K rate, but all three of these guys are struggling. And I guess kind of, you know, the thing that I would point towards is this is extraordinarily common, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't come up and Juan Soto it, you know, most people come up and Kelnick it, you know, that's very common. These guys, even though they may have all had great springs, even though they're facing, you know, MLB talent, it's entirely different when you get to the, you know, to the big leagues and you're facing guys that are playing games for absolute real. I think, honestly, I think all three of these guys are going to be fine. I think that, I mean, I think that Julio Rodriguez has, without question, Hall of Fame caliber talent. Mm-hmm. I think Bobby Witt Jr. has, without question, Hall of Fame talent. Spencer Torkelson, not quite there just because I don't think he has all the same, you know, level of tools across the board that these other mm-hmm. guys have. But, I mean, that guy's a perennial all-star, you know, bat. So don't panic on any of these guys. I mean, obviously, if you're in Dynasty, you wouldn't even dream of it. But I would still give him some leash in redraft as well. I don't think Witt's going anywhere. Torkelson, maybe, I guess, just because the Tigers, you know, may or may not compete, I guess. I mean, they're playing well, but I could see them falling off a cliff and maybe sending him down for, you know, a little bit like they did with, you know, Kelnick in Seattle. Julio Rodriguez, I think the Mariners are a team that is looking to compete. I guess if struggles continue, they've got bats in the outfield to replace him with, so I could see him theoretically getting sent down, but I would give these guys some leash because we're talking, you know, less than a handful of games. And, yeah, we'd like to see them all batting 400. But this is, I think, what we should expect to have seen. And I haven't seen the bats. I've only seen a couple of bats of Witt. I haven't seen any of J-Rod. But I'm telling you, Torkelson does not look outmatched. He just looks like he's learning. What do you guys have for takeaways?
I haven't seen any of these at-bats, like, live. I've seen, I think, J-Rod's only hit was one that he beat out. It was like an infield single. And he ran like hell down the line. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I think would, not that, but, like, his hustle is going to keep him in the lineup. Managers love to see people run out fucking ground balls. And especially beat out ground balls. That type of stuff is things that gets your name written down in the lineup. And I think his upside is so high. He's probably out of these three, the only one I can see being sent down is Torque, which is what you said. But yeah, like, yeah, I don't think they'd send Witt down, and I don't think they'd send down Rodriguez either.
Yeah, I think Witt's probably the safest out of them just because he's had the least struggles just as far as the plate appearances go. And then he's also made some defensive plays too. I think I saw the other day, he like basically, you know, the infield was in and he had a rocket to him at third and he threw it home on like a crazy weird play where the ball bounced before the plate and he still got the guy out at home. So he's playing defense too. So I think, and obviously, like, you know, the Royals aren't looking to compete too much right now. So I think Witt's probably the safest, then Torque. And then I think as much as it pains, I think J-Rod would be, if he is in any sort of risk, I think he would be right now. Again, they're not, just like us in Dynasty, MLB teams aren't going to start freaking out over, you know, it was like 15 plate appearances or something, 15 yeah. at-bats. So I'd wait a few weeks, see if you're in redraft to be, you know, hitting that panic button on any of these guys, to be honest with you. And like you said, Torque, I think, has that advanced plate approach too, because he has those three walks in five games. So he's not like he's up there swinging at everything. So he's being patient, looking for his pitch.
No, and he's got some shitty calls too. I mean, and maybe that's a Tigers homer in me, but I've seen two strikeouts that he got, you know, a called third strike that, you know, Miguel Cabrera would have got that call. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it was borderline, sure, but I mean, it was a ball. So, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to say, Jason, is I think I was as hard on anyone with the Javi Baez signing in Detroit.
Oh, I saw your tweet go out.
He's actually been really good. I mean, he very well could have three home runs at this point, because he absolutely fucking torched the ball in the second game, I think it was, of the season. And it would have been out of a lot of ballparks, but it wasn't out of Comerica. And then he had that game winner where, you know, I don't know how much you guys seen of it, but he hit a ball and it ended up just grazing the wall before the player got his glove on it and then ended up.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
They called him out, but it hit the wall first. So mm-hmm. he's, you know, what, he's 10 inches away from a home run there. He's, mm-hmm. you know, so who knows how many ballparks that would have been out of. And then he actually, you know, actually hit a home run too. So he's made a couple nice defensive plays. He's kind of effed up a couple of them as well, but mm-hmm. Very impressed with his defense at shortstop. I mean, he's made a couple of plays, you know what I mean? And sometimes guys that have a lot of range can get a little bit of a bad rap for missing plays, because they're getting to a ball that most people wouldn't even get to. And so when they miss it, it's like, oh, I can't, he missed that ball. Well, guess what? Willie Castro last year got to that ball. you know, Javi Baez got to it. Yeah, he went off his glove and he missed it, and it looks bad, quote unquote.
Right. But
the reality is most players aren't getting to the ball. So you really do have to keep that in mind, I think, as well. But I'm turning the corner on Javi Baez pretty quick. I love his energy. You know, yeah, I've still got my concerns.
Yeah, of course. They're always, and even as a Cub fan, I had those concerns too.
But we'll see how the season goes on. I will just say that so far, I can assuredly say I've been pleasantly surprised with Javi Baez to this point.
Yeah, I'm actually curious to see now that the way he started off the season, you know, maybe getting out of these big markets. You know, he was in Chicago, he was in New York, maybe somewhere like Detroit where it's not quite as big of a market. Maybe the pressure's not as high to him. So I'm definitely curious to see where the season takes him for sure.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So, all right, boys, it's been good to have baseball back.
Yes.
I fortunately didn't have a no-hitter to talk about.
It's still early.
No one's pitching more than four innings.
Yeah, unless you're Spencer Strider. maybe we'll see something come next week. But you know, look forward to another week of baseball, and you know, just keeping an eye on some of these things. Like a lot of stuff we talked about will be interesting. You know, we were not going to get an answer on Chris Paddock for a few months. You know, see how that kind of turns out. We'll probably be talking in two or three weeks about the fall of Stephen Kwan. you know, that'll be interesting. We'll see what Strider does with a few more appearances. We'll see what Manoa looks like, you know, getting a month or two into the season. Can he stay healthy? If he stays healthy, I don't think any of us think that he's not going to pitch well. You know, did the Suzuki keep it going?
Right.
You know, I mean, we'll see. And then what about, you know, the rookies you talked about? You know, J-Rod, Bobby Witt, Torkelson. So one of them is going to catch fire at some point in time. All three of them might catch fire. I mean, those are all three guys that have legitimate chances to win the AL Rookie of the Year. And it'll be fun to kind of watch them grow a little bit. You know, I'll have the benefit of seeing Torkelson almost every single day. A little harder for us to watch J-Rod because he's out on the West Coast.
Yeah.
I'll get to see a little more Bobby Witt than you guys just because, you know, they're going to play the Tigers so often. But it's a fun time to be a baseball fan. Beginning of the season, all of us still have hope for our teams. So it's interesting. It's interesting. So, all right, boys, yep. I will look forward to talking with you next week, and we'll kind of see what happens and see what we got to talk about then.
See you then,
absolutely.
Boys.
See you, boys. We'll be right back.